Hello. It's February 22nd, 2025. My name is Simone, and this is a special encore edition of 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to this brand new special encore episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and are looking forward to a great weekend. And today's episode is an encore episode from season 4. And I've never done an encore presentation of an episode in the history of 90s Crime Time. Still, I wanted to bring you an encore of Season 4, Episode 1 of 90s Crime Time titled The Favor, because I have an update about the case. And this case was one of the most nerve-wracking and heart-wrenching cases I've ever researched and reported on the show. So, without further ado, here's an encore presentation of Season 4, Episode 1 of 90s Crime Time, titled The Favor. And please make sure you listen all the way until the end for an update about the case. The year was 1993, and in Glendale, Arizona, a suburb of Phoenix, Arizona, about 9 miles away, had a population of a little under 150,000. And because the city wasn't too small, plenty of its inhabitants had plenty to do. Whether it was have fun and mingle at one of the city's annual festivals, or have a gathering at a nearby ranch, the people of Glendale had their options of leisure. Also this year, since Phoenix is so close, lots of Glendale flocked to the capital city to have even more fun. In that year, in 1993, Arizona as a whole had a lot to celebrate. That was because their beloved basketball team, the Phoenix Suns, had made it to the NBA Finals. However, even though the Suns were prepping hard to win the championship, one of their players wasn't in such a winning mood. For this player, he had a situation bigger than the game that had his attention. And once his quote-unquote situation was handled, it would make headlines. In the following case, you'll find out who this player was, the situation that had him unnerved, the investigation, and the shocking aftermath in a case I title, The Favor. In early 1993, 27-year-old Althea Hayes was an aspiring singer. It's unclear about most of her upbringing, but what is known is that she was born to Alvin and Hazel Hayes in a devout Christian household. According to reports, Althea was a resident of Glendale, and while she was pursuing her singing career, she got a job at a bookstore in Phoenix named the Mustoff Collection. The Mustoff Collection was a popular bookstore, especially with the black communities in Phoenix and the surrounding areas, because most of the books and products here were showcased specifically for blacks. This excited Althea because she was a young black lady herself. And even more exciting for her was who owned the bookstore. He was a young, 23-year-old man named Gerard Mustoff. But Gerard wasn't just your average bookstore owner.
He was a power forward for the NBA team, the Phoenix Suns. According to reports, Gerard was born Tara Gerard Brown in 1969 to a single mother in North Carolina, where he was primarily raised. From most accounts, Gerard's upbringing seemed to be typical, but when he was around the age of seven, his biological father, Shahar Mustaf, suddenly appeared in his life and told Gerard he wanted to be involved. It's assumed that Gerard welcomed his father, but to his mother's family, they thought Shahar had other motives. You see, as Gerard grew up, he grew to be very tall, taller than a young boy his age, and they thought Shahar only came back to Gerard once he thought he could be good at sports, specifically basketball. However, to Shahar, according to the New York Times, he came back into Gerard's life because he, quote-unquote, saw himself as part of the Army for Black Liberation. His son would be his sword and shield, end quote. Shahar felt angry with how the country and the world treated Black people in his mind, and he wanted to make his voice heard. But he needed someone to protest with him, his son. After all, even though Gerard was still very young, by now he was very tall, and Shahar felt Gerard could be some sort of protester or militant with him, and possibly protect him. Over the next few years, it's unclear of the activities the father and son did together regarding protesting. But when Gerard turned 12, he spent a summer in Maryland with his father and attended a basketball camp. Shahar knew his son was going places, and a year later, with permission from Gerard's mother, Gerard moved in with his father permanently to Maryland. While raising Gerard, Shahar apparently told him about the struggle Black people faced in the country and brought Gerard to even more protest, commanding change for Black life and strife. They would walk picket lines and sit in union halls. But Gerard, who eventually changed his last name to his father's last name, Mustaf, never changed his love of the game of basketball. And he apparently had no issues living with Shahar. However, according to a report, Gerard's mother changed her mind and tried to get him to come back to North Carolina. She wanted him back so bad that she and a family member drove to Maryland to bring Gerard home. When they got to him, he got in the car, but then he had a change of heart and jumped out and ran away, back to his father, where he remained. Fast forwarding to his teen years, Gerard kept getting better at his basketball skill. And by the time he was in high school, Gerard became one of the biggest basketball stars, not only in his high school, but in his region. And due to his skill, by the late 1980s, college basketball recruiters began knocking on Gerard's door. Shahar encouraged him to pick what was best for him, but to make sure he chose the right pick, he encouraged Gerard to ask the recruiters different questions that was the best for him and his race. For one, Gerard would ask recruiters, quote, "What percentage of your university's faculty positions are held by Blacks? What percentage of your Black students actually graduate?" End quote. He and Shahar would also ask them to list the number of Blacks in the athletic department and the amount of business the university did with Black people. And according to reports, these questions would often offend, if not downright anger, many of the recruiters. But Shahar and Gerard were firm with their questioning, until Gerard chose to commit to the University of Maryland, whose coach was black. According to reports, when Gerard started playing in Maryland, he was apparently neither bad or exceptionally good. But after 2 years at the college, with the permission of his father, he decided to try for the 1990 NBA draft. Even though he didn't shine as bright as he did in high school, in the 1990 draft, Gerard was picked 17th overall by the New York Knicks, where he apparently did modestly during his first year. Gerard was eventually traded to the Phoenix Suns, where the staff and team believed he would be another big star for them, just like Charles Barkley. But to their dismay, Gerard wasn't as good as they thought. Even though he had a multi-million dollar contract, he mostly sat on the bench. But with his money, Gerard invested a lot in typical things, such as cars and other expensive items. But he also invested a lot into the community and started the bookstore, like previously mentioned. At the bookstore, Gerard hired mostly younger staff like himself, including his cousin, Lavani Vonnie Wooten, in 1991. Vonnie had recently been released from prison in North Carolina, where he served 14 months on drug-related charges. Gerard's father urged him to help Vonnie out since his release, and in return, Vonnie was ecstatic that his family was willing to take a chance on him so he could get a new start. But unfortunately, just 2 years after he started at the bookstore, Gerard and Vonnie argued over a bill, and apparently things got physical at the store. According to reports, Vonnie told police Gerard hit him with a phone, and in response, they charged Gerard with aggravated assault, and Vonnie filed a civil action against him. Vonnie then quit the bookstore and moved back to the East Coast. Despite the fight, Gerard continued working his NBA career, the bookstore, and other business ventures, such as operating a talent agency. According to a report, Gerard also had a pregnant fiance, but apparently their relationship wasn't the greatest. Because apparently, while his fiance was 8 months pregnant, she discovered a letter to Gerard from a woman living in Florida, claiming Gerard was the father of her child. When his fiance confronted him about it, Gerard apparently fired a gun through a wall near her, and she filed an assault charge, which was later dropped. Also during this time, Althea was hired at the bookstore. And not only was she excited to be working for an NBA player, she was also excited to learn that Gerard operated a talent agency and that he could possibly help her start a music career. When the two met, there seemed to be a mutual attraction. And even though he had a fiance, Gerard began a sexual relationship with Althea. Althea thought he was a catch and it was a thrill. But when she informed some of her family that she was dating an NBA player, they told her to be careful because many athletes had a reputation for being playboys and hurting their spouses and girlfriends. Meanwhile, Gerard's fiance had since given birth since the gun incident, and she became pregnant by Gerard again, not too long after the birth. But this time, she decided to abort the second pregnancy. By the spring of 1993, Gerard was still sort of a lackluster player with the Suns. And now he was officially separated from his fiance. But he still hooked up with different women, including Althea. He was living it up, but that was until Althea came to him with some news. She was pregnant. It's unclear what Althea thought Gerard's reaction would be, but what she probably wasn't expecting was Gerard asking her to have an abortion. Possibly hurt, Althea told Gerard she planned on having the baby, but Gerard begged her to terminate. According to reports, after he pressured her into having an abortion, Althea told friends and family that since she refused, Gerard acted differently towards her and barely spoke to her anymore. And when he did speak to her, he would offer her money in the thousands to abort her pregnancy, which she still refused, and she continued working at the bookstore and to care for her unborn baby. By the summer of 1993, the Suns had made it to the NBA Finals, with their opponent being the Chicago Bulls. And while most of the players were focusing on winning the trophy, apparently Gerard was doing anything but. It wasn't because he didn't want his team to win the finals. He just had other pressing matters, such as welcoming another possible baby into the world. Like mentioned before, Althea still refused to abort her baby. But according to reports, she told loved ones she began to grow not just sad, but fearful of Gerard's attitude towards the situation. Althea apparently felt Gerard would do anything to force her to not have the baby, and she told almost anyone who would listen, including her parents and even medical staff who tended to her prenatal care. In one report, it was stated that nurses became very concerned when Althea would talk about Gerard, and she would become very emotional, upset, and concerned about her well-being. And in return, they'd refer her to counselors, but it's unclear if she actually went to talk to anyone. By July 1993, Althea was at her wit's end while trying to be strong for her unborn child, but she was so afraid at the same time. So afraid that on July 21st, she made a call to a cousin begging them to get her a ticket out of town. She was that fearful that something was going to happen to her and her baby. Meanwhile, on the same day, after their big blow-up at the bookstore years earlier, Vonnie and his girlfriend made their way back to Phoenix because he and Gerard were to make amends. A day earlier on the 20th, Vonnie had received two plane tickets for he and his girlfriend from Gerard to come back to the West Coast, and Vonnie's mother allegedly received $1,500 from Gerard to cover rent on her apartment. When Vonnie and his girlfriend arrived in Phoenix, they stayed at Gerard's home. On the evening of July 22nd, around 10 p.m., Vonnie's girlfriend woke up from a nap at Gerard's house, but she didn't see Vonnie and questioned Gerard about where he was. Gerard apparently responded and told her Vonnie went out to handle business. A short time later, Vonnie returned wearing odd-looking clothes, all black with a knit hat, and he told his girlfriend to pack because they were driving to California, where she still had a home. Although confused, she did as she was told, and she and Vonnie immediately left Gerard's home. And soon they were out of the state, heading to California. And according to reports, as she was driving out of state, she noticed Vonnie disassembling a handgun and throwing pieces out the window. Meanwhile, back in Arizona, Alvin Hayes, Althea's father, grew concerned when he hadn't heard from his daughter after 2 days. So to check on her, he went to her apartment and knocked, but there was no answer. So he was able to make his way inside her unit, and when he looked around and finally got to her bedroom, he came across a sight no one should have to see. There on the bedroom floor was the body of his daughter, 27-year-old Althea Hayes. Horrified and distraught, Alvin called for emergency personnel, but there was no hope. Althea and her unborn child were dead. According to the medical examiner, she had been dead for around 48 hours, and she had been shot 3 to 4 times, with 2 shots in her head. During the investigation, police learned from Althea's neighbors that on the evening of the 22nd, they heard what sounded like gunshots or fireworks. And police also learned from a friend of Althea's that shortly before 9:30 p.m., she called her and said, quote, "Gerard's cousin Vonnie is over here right now. So if anything happens to me, you know who is here," end quote. Police were unsure who this Vonnie was, but once his name was presented as a relative of Gerard Mustaf, they decided to contact Gerard, who Althea's loved one said they really needed to look at. The same day Althea's body was discovered, Vonnie returned to Arizona, and Gerard and another one of Gerard's girlfriends took Vonnie to a mall where they bought him a new suit and then took him back to the airport, where it's believed he went back to North Carolina. The next day on the 23rd, Glendale police questioned Gerard about Althea and the murder, and he apparently told them he knew who she was, but she was not a girlfriend, and he didn't know she was pregnant. He was also presented the information that he offered Althea money for an abortion, but he adamantly denied this as well. He told police that he was entertaining guests at his home around the time Althea was murdered. Even though Gerard was denying almost everything he was questioned about, police still side-eyed him, but they wanted to take a look at Vonnie as well. On July 26th, police tried to call him, but he didn't answer. But shortly after, he returned their phone call. On the phone call, Vonnie denied knowing Althea, but then he backtracked and said he may have met her once before, and he told a detective that he flew to Phoenix on the night of the 22nd, then backtracked again and said the 21st. He said he flew there to visit his girlfriend's cousin, who was still living there, and once played for the Arizona Cardinals. However, when police investigated his alibi, they discovered some cracks in his story. For one, Vonnie's girlfriend's cousin was out of town at the time of the murder, and they discovered from people who worked at Gerard's bookstore that Vonnie and Althea knew each other well, but police still didn't have enough evidence to arrest him or Gerard for Althea's murder. 3 months later, however, detectives learned Vonnie had dropped the years-old bookstore-related assault charge and the civil suit against Gerard. And on the day Althea's body was found, Gerard curiously wrote a $10,000 check to purchase land in North Carolina, which he was going to use to build and operate a disco, and which Vonnie was to manage. The Glendale police had gotten more information, but were at a standstill. But after 9 more months of questioning witnesses, including Vonnie's girlfriend and Althea's loved ones, police had enough evidence to now charge and arrest the now 28-year-old Lavonnie Wooten for Althea's murder. On April 8, 1994, Vonnie was arrested and charged with first-degree murder, burglary, and witness tampering. Burglary charges were added because he illegally entered Althea's apartment, and witness tampering was added because Vonnie apparently tried to coach his girlfriend on what to tell police. A week later, Gerard was summoned by a grand jury, but through a lawyer, he invoked his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. And by doing this, Gerard was able to remain silent on the murder. By this point, the Suns had lost to the Bulls, therefore losing the finals. And in September 1994, the Suns released Gerard, ending his NBA career. In late 1995, Vonnie's trial began. And it's not quite often that the prosecution and defense agree on something. But in this case, they agreed on one thing. Vonnie's cousin, Gerard Mustaf, was the mastermind of Althea's murder. But due to a lack of evidence against him, Vonnie Wooten was the only one that could technically be tried. Vonnie's defense added, though, their client was innocent and that maybe Gerard set up the plan, but another one of his associates pulled the trigger. The prosecution even offered Vonnie a plea deal if he admitted Gerard was the mastermind, but he never did. Therefore, after 2 weeks of trial, which according to reports shockingly received little media coverage, even though the case was connected to a professional athlete, a jury found Vonnie Wooten guilty of Althea Hayes' murder. Even more shocking was that when the verdict was read, Vonnie smiled, hugged some of his defense team, high-fived some of his supporters, and as he was being led away to prison, he yelled, "Peace." Later at his sentencing on January 30th, 1996, Vonnie was spared the death penalty and given a life sentence for murder, 21 years for the burglary, and nearly 2 years for witness tampering. He has since appealed his conviction, but it was denied. To their bittersweet delight, Althea's parents sobbed tears of joy because their daughter's killer was brought to justice. But they told the media there was no justice because they believed two people were responsible. That second person being, of course, Gerard, who did not show up at any point in the trial. After he was released by the NBA, Gerard resumed his career in Europe, but that was short-lived as well. He tried to play again in the NBA, but no team would give him a chance, maybe because he was lackluster with the Suns. But Gerard believed it was because of the murder. And he even told the press about his dismay about not being able to play, saying, quote, "I've been convicted without a trial. What about innocent until proven guilty?" End quote. Shortly after Vonnie's trial, Gerard also settled out of court with Althea's parents with a wrongful death lawsuit claiming Gerard had summoned Vonnie to Phoenix for the, quote, "express purpose of carrying out the plan to kill Althea Hayes," end quote. and the two parties settled for an undisclosed amount. After the civil trial, prosecutors and the defense still tried to bring Gerard to justice because there was no statute of limitations. But they still didn't have enough sufficient evidence against him. However, according to reports, the prosecutor of Vonnie's case received a phone call from a former fling of Gerard, and she told him that when she went to visit him in Europe, he accused her of stealing $10,000 from him. He then called and left a voicemail allegedly saying, quote, "I will recover that money by any and all means. If you don't believe me, you better ask about me in Arizona," end quote. The voicemail was apparently turned over to authorities, but Gerard still never faced charges with the threat or with Althea's murder. Years after the murder and trial, Vonnie remains in prison, and now Gerard, after several failed business attempts, went back to Arizona, where he allegedly runs nonprofits. And although he has never really been implicated in Althea Hayes' murder, the statute of limitations remains open.
And now for an update. Despite the limitations remaining open regarding Althea's case, Gerard was never charged for her murder. However, after his basketball career, he went back to his home state of Maryland, went on to date other women, and was even accused of domestic violence against some of them as well, even reportedly violating a restraining order. He eventually settled down and married and had more children by his wife, and became a community leader, taking over his father's nonprofit called Mustaf Led the Take Charge Program, a program designed to keep vulnerable teens out of the criminal justice system, amongst other programs. And in late October 2024, media reports broke the news that Gerard Mustaf passed away on his 55th birthday on October 28, 2024, with many of the reports still questioning his role in Althea Hayes' murder. And that's it. Thank you for tuning in to this encore presentation of Season 4, Episode 1, The Favor, from 90s Crime Time. And I hope you all who have not listened to that episode found it very interesting. If you go back on Season 4 and listen to this episode, it is released on your podcast platforms. You can hear what I think of this case. And I just, when I heard that Gerard Mustaf had passed away, I was more of like, not really, you know, skeptical about how he died. I really don't care. But I just had all these feelings about what I thought about this case when I saw that he died. And I even was very, you know, kind of surprised that the media still was questioning him to this day about his role in Althea's murder. Because it just, in my opinion, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out. Something searches kind of pointing to some people. But like I said, you can listen to my opinion if you'd like on the actual episode, The Favor, Season 4, Episode 1. It's just a very sad case. And like I said in the beginning, this is one of my most heart-wrenching cases, in my opinion, regarding just a murder in general. It also reminded me of the Ray Carruth murder. Sharika Adams' murder and Ray Carruth plotting her murder. So, you know, like I said, I can't name Gerard as a suspect, but I'm just going to go, and you draw your own conclusion. And that's it. Like I said, thank you for tuning into this encore presentation. Next week, I will also have a different episode of 90s Crime Time than the usual because it's a guest read episode. It's a cross promotion of another true crime podcast that actually took place in the 80s, but they came to me wanting to spread information about this case, and I'm really excited. I don't do cases that are not the 90s. I've only done it once before with Ivy League murders, but I'm very excited to bring this case to you next week. And look out for that. Again, it's a guest read episode, and it's, you know, very interesting. It's a true crime, obviously a true crime story from the 80s again. But like I said, look out for it next week. Stay safe and healthy, and I'll see you soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.